We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? How we doing? And welcome to this week's edition of NBA Friday, part of the Riverfront Media Network. I'm Tim Daniel here. Sean is in Disney, and I don't know where Parker is. So hang it out with me this week. If you are one of our regular listeners here and you're in the Patreon Hoops channel, you know this name, obviously. Very excited he's here with me today, Kevin Lynch. What's up, man?
Thank you, Tim. Excited to be here as well. Always fun talking basketball with you.
Yeah, it was funny. So I was like texting with Nate and Joe, and I was like, I need a third this week. Like, are you guys free? And they're like, no, unfortunately, we can't do it. They're like, but you should reach out to Kevin Lynch and see if he wants to join. I was like, that's a great idea. So,
yeah, you're fulfilling my dream of finally being a. I'm the last person on earth that doesn't have a podcast, so I get
that's true.
Finally do it. So
we have like 30 now here. I came to the Riverfront, and I was like, we're blowing this thing up. We're putting out all the content.
Yeah.
So it's been fun. You know. If Parker does, in fact, join us, we'll bring him right on. So Kevin, obviously, like I said, so if you're in the Patreon Hoops chat from the Slack chat, which we definitely appreciate, by the way, Kevin's regularly active in there, brings a lot of really good insight. Also does not like D'Angelo Russell. So I knew I had to have him on the show. And also very like-minded to me, which even though I am a Bulls fan, you lived in Chicago. I also still love LeBron James, as you can see by my jersey. You love LeBron James. So we're going to have a lot of fun here, and we got a lot of some fun topics. So our current topic, we're going to dive a little bit into the Cavs. Kind of have a conversation just realistically. How good are they? What can they do? So I'm really excited to get Kevin's insight on that. Our flashback, we're going to talk about the ramifications of Jimmy Butler's trade to the Minnesota Timberwolves, which was a mess, as we all remember. If I could play the Jeff T clip where he talks about the infamous practice, I would. But we got flagged last week for something I posted on Late Night Reds, so I have to watch myself now. I'll forever make fun of it. I made fun of it on the Riverfront this week.
Yeah.
And then our draft, Sean set us up really well for this one. Oof. It is your all-time 7-foot or taller team. So can we even put a full team together? I don't know. But also now that there's two of us, it does get a little better.
It does.
So if Parker does show up, it gets a little wonky. But we'll figure it out there. So Kevin, I just didn't want to start here, obviously. And we do get some Patreon questions, so I want to get to as well. We got two really good ones. One from you, actually. Is one from you, actually, now. I really appreciate that. I really appreciate your insight every week. So I want to start with the Cavs because obviously this is a team who you kind of saw the beginning of this last year. And then this year, I thought they'd be really good. I thought, you know, even I said they were going to be under in their win totals. They were like, it was pretty high. It was in the 50s.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the sense that I thought they were a bad team. I just thought that was a lot of wins. And now it looks possible. I think it was like 52.5.
Yeah.
So it's definitely in the wheelhouse now. We know what Donovan Mitchell is, and he's gotten better somehow, which is great. A lot of people question, can him and Garland play together? I think that they've answered the question regular season-wise. They certainly can.
Yeah.
I love Evan Mobley, one of my favorite players in the league. I've been very high on him since high school. So I'm excited to see, since he's come back, that he's like shooting threes finally and stretching the floor while also being one of the top five defenders in the NBA. I mean, last year he was third in the league for Defensive Player of the Year voting. Jared Allen has been great. Obviously, Max Strus hit that incredible shot the other night, but they have scorers. I mean, Georges Niang, Max Strus, Caris LeVert, Isaac Okoro is shooting the ball really well out of the blue this year. And then, you know, these guys are bringing up on two ways for contributing. Like Craig Porter Jr., who you're a UC guy. You saw him at Wichita State.
Yeah.
We didn't think he'd be good in the league. Like, I didn't think he'd make the league.
Right.
I thought he'd be like a G League guy who occasionally got called up when a roster spot was needed, and he's been awesome. So the last 15 games, Kevin, they have been ninth in the league in offensive rating and third in the league in defensive rating. So we say all these things and they sound all nice and we're all excited about the talent this team has, and understandably so. But I do agree with what Ryan Rosillo has said recently, in the sense of that Knicks series still has a very dark cloud over their head from last year. And I agree.
Yeah.
I don't know if they necessarily got quote unquote tougher to go in a series like that, but I certainly think they're talented enough to win a round or two. Where are you at on the Cavs?
So I'm very cautious about the Cavs, I would say, like cautiously optimistic, you can say. But so they've been on an incredible run for even longer than you were saying. It's really been 2+ months that they've just been incredible. The dirty secret is they had the worst schedule in the NBA, or the easiest schedule in the NBA, I should say, during those 2 months, right? If you look at their wins or even their games played, had a couple of nice wins against the Bucks, a couple others, but a lot of Wizards, a lot of
Pistons, Bulls,
all of them. Yeah. So they did what they're supposed to do. You're supposed to beat all those teams, right?
Right.
So, but I do, if we're talking ceiling with them, I think every team in the East, just about, or maybe the top six teams, ceiling is the Eastern Conference Finals, except for Boston. I don't think anybody goes through Boston. Like, I think it's Boston's here. So if you're talking ceiling, I would say it's Eastern Conference Finals, but I'd say the same thing for even Philly if Embiid came back, obviously Milwaukee, the Knicks. Like, so, but like realistic, what would I expect? I think it's all about like the matchup in the first round for them. Because we saw it with the Knicks. And it's about the matchup. And are some of these things that have happened the last couple of months sustainable? Like you said, Mobley shooting threes. He had an incredible like month shooting threes, but he has the first 2+ years of his career were not good at shooting threes.
Right.
So does that keep happening? So I would definitely say cautiously optimistic, realize that they've been playing awesome, but they've had some advantages to why they've been playing awesome. And same as you, keeping in mind that they got punked last year against the Knicks. And would that happen again? Because they are smaller team in the backcourt and a little bit like they're big, but maybe not quite as athletic in the front court with some of the stretch fours that they play against and everything. So yeah, excited, but kind of a wait and see.
I think that's like the best way to go. So I'm looking at their schedule. I'm trying to pull up their schedule now for what the rest of the year looks like. Mm-hmm. If my phone will cooperate, beautiful thing about the internet. So let's see. So tomorrow, or today, if this goes up, check this out. All right. So tomorrow or today at Detroit. So, you know, they come home for two games against the Knicks and the Celtics. They go to Atlanta. They come home for three games against Minnesota, Brooklyn, and Phoenix. And then they're on the road for three at New Orleans, Houston, Indiana. And then they're home for Miami. This is all March.
Yeah.
And then they're on the road for Minnesota, Miami, come home for Charlotte, go to Charlotte, come home for Philly, go to Denver. So basically the whole season they've had.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it'll be interesting. If they get the top, if they get a two seed, I think they should win the first round. If they slip back to three, if you slip to three as it is right now, they could be playing Philly with Embiid back. Like,
right.
You know, and that's a whole lot different than playing the Pacers as fun as the Pacers have been this year or some of the other teams that might come out of the play-in tournament.
Yeah, because I'm looking, so right now they're the 2 seed, like you mentioned, but they're literally a half game up and they're a game up in the loss. They're a game under Milwaukee in the win column and a game up on them in the loss column. Milwaukee's on a 4-game win streak right now. Right. So that's close because like you said, let's say Miami slips a little bit. They're on a 5-game win streak and you play the Heat in the first round.
No,
you don't want that. No. You mentioned the Pacers who, like I said, I love the Pacers. They're about to go on. They're over. I told everyone it was the easiest of the year, and they're 2 wins away from it. So you're welcome. That's a series where I would love to watch it because I think Garland versus Halliburton for up to 6 games would be a blast. Mm-hmm. But I think they would win that series. I think they'd beat Orlando.
Yeah. Same. I think all those teams in that 7-10 range that could fall in there, all of them are actually, most of them for the most part, are less experienced than the Cavs. And everyone in the top 6 is more experienced than the Cavs. So that's where their realistic ceiling, I think, is second round, and it kind of depends on that first round matchup.
I agree. I think that's definitely the best way to look at it. Certainly talented. I don't really know if they have a weakness on their roster necessarily when you look at it like 1 through whatever the rotation is going to be. I still think, but you know, even you can say that, but are they better than the teams we just talked about? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I would love to say I'm wrong there because I do love them. I love watching Garland play. I think he's so good. And I think he's really underrated, honestly. You can kind of see, I know he's been to an All-Star game. But it's neither here nor there. I like this team, but I'm exactly with you.
Well, I do think they have one week. I agree with you. They're very solid from a roster standpoint. I think their very obvious weakness is perimeter defense. And that's I think that comes out in the playoffs, especially they go against Philly and they go against Maxey. Maxey might average 40 points against the Cavs.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Like, so that is kind of my concern with them, especially in what I talked about the matchups. I think if they go against teams that have one of these elite point guards, shooting guards or something like that, I really worry about their perimeter defense.
Yeah, because if you're in that case, like you said, so if you're looking through, let's say, I mean, so yeah, like I said, I'm with you. The 7 through 10 guys, but you mentioned Maxey. That's a possibility. Mm-hmm. That's scary.
Yeah.
You look at Miami. They got to figure out a way to stop Butler in a playoff series where that's when he is Jimmy Butler.
What he'll actually play.
Yeah. The Knicks go in a slump there for a little bit. They got to figure out another way to stop Brunson. We've seen that before. I think it's 2 seed or nothing if they want to get a couple there, but I do think that they don't have to win the East yet. And I don't mean that in a sense of anything. Like if they don't, it's a failure. I think it has where they're at now, it's still growing, and whatever Mitchell's future is, no one knows. I mean, you've heard the rumblings of, I think Kobe Altman has kind of said he wants to build a team around him. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to go. And you also kind of hear the conversation of like, well, the Lakers are going to try to trade for him. The Knicks want him. The Nets want him. He's a New York kid. You hear that all the time, obviously. I just always thought that was the weirdest thing ever, where it's like, that guy's from there, therefore he like...
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Anthony Davis is dying to play for the Bulls. I think he probably would have liked to, like, when he was growing up.
No.
I think he likes where he's at.
It's a reaction because the one guy that did that was LeBron.
Right.
Like, and so now they think every player wants to go back home or play for their hometown team or something because...
Yeah, Melo.
You know, because he did. Yeah, exactly. And so, I think it's, you know, some people want to do anything but play for their hometown team.
Yeah, especially when your hometown team is the Bulls, which I'm not... I'm not going to get into my tangent this week. They did win last night, obviously, so I will take it. I think, like you said, like I did want the Cavs to draft Malachi Branham really bad. I'm not going to lie, before he went to the Spurs, because he's a St. Vincent St. Mary's kid. So that obviously didn't work out. But, yeah, I think that kind of is a fair conversation on the Cavaliers. Let's get to these Patreon questions. So should I do yours first or should we go with the other one first?
Your choice. Your show, your choice.
All right. Let's see here. So we kind of touched on this for a second there, but Hunter Martin in the chat, really fun conversationalist. What potential playoff matches are you all hoping to see the most? And one of them we talked about, I really would love to see Cavs Pacers, even though I don't think either team has a shot to win the title. Just super fun basketball for, like I said, six games. You have the Halliburton versus Garland. You've got the Mobley versus Siakam matchup. I really like what the Pacers are building. I think they're going to be really fun for a long time. Both teams have awesome bench scoring. So that's definitely one that I really want to see.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. So I picked that one, and I kind of assumed we were talking about first round matchups because that's what we know, right? And so I picked that one from each conference, and it's like the 4-5 game in each conference. Like in the East, like Miami versus the Knicks, like because that's like old school back when we started watching the NBA,
give
the
me most that hated for like rivalry. 2 weeks,
and just the way those teams are kind of built now, it almost feels like that rivalry could come back if they're both playing well and everything. So I would love to see that one. And then the West, like the Clippers versus Suns, like how many first round series do you get where you could have 6-7 Hall of Famers playing against each other in that? And just, and I feel like there's so much pressure on especially the Clippers, but even on Durant on the other side, like time's starting to run out. You got to make this work, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just think that I think both of those series for different reasons would be super intense.
I really like that one. I'm also going to stick with, I'm going to stick with OKC. OKC Dallas is one that would be really fascinating to me in the sense that, and I've talked a lot about how Luka just annoys the heck out of me, even though I know he's incredible. Yeah. But I kind of think that would be really fun to see like Shea versus Kyrie in a playoff series.
Yeah.
You heard Andre Iguodala come up with a quote this week where he said in a clutch, he trusts Kyrie more than Steph Curry and it's not even close. That's a little crazy to me, but I do understand the idea of like being scared of Kyrie Irving when a game's on the line for
100%. That was going to be my other answer is literally OKC against whoever they're playing. Cause that's that's the number one team I do want to see in the playoffs just because they are so fun and they're so young and like, are they ready for the playoffs? Like right now, could they buck the trend of young teams have to lose for 2 or 3 years before they ascend to actually, you know, competing for the title. So if we were talking about a singular team I want to see in the playoffs, it would be them. But like matchup wise, I really in the West, the Clippers Suns, I just think would be incredible.
Yeah, I love that series. I'm all for it. If the Lakers somehow sneak in at the 8th seed, how would they handle a team like Minnesota?
Yeah,
in a playoff series, I think I like their chances.
I do too.
But sorry, Hunter, I know you're a Minnesota fan.
I kind of like the Lakers' chances more against Minnesota than the other top five teams, to be honest.
Yeah.
It just think, you know, between the fact that Minnesota is young and I just think it's a series where LeBron could win it with his brain because that's how he's going to win the series now before that Lakers team just gets overmatched with talent. I think that if that one were to come, if they were able to get to 8, I also think that would be really interesting.
That would be interesting because the sense that yes, you're absolutely right. But on their end, they have Mike Conley, who's also basketball IQ is through the roof. So just to see those guys play chess against each other.
Yeah.
Would be really, really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like those matchups as well. So speaking of, your question was, how in the world does LeBron James engineer a 21-point fourth quarter comeback against one of the best teams in the NBA? And I have to strategically get off the couch so I don't hurt my back and I'm only 2 years older than him. we're elder statesmen now. You know, I'm in my mid-30s, so I'm with you. And yeah, it's fascinating. So terrible, terrible thing. I mentioned this. So I fell asleep when they were down 19, thinking like,
don't apologize. I watched it this morning. I didn't stay up for it either, but I watched the fourth quarter this morning after I found out what happened.
I did too. Yeah. I like pulled it up real quick on YouTube TV on my iPad while I was working today.
Yeah.
I watched it while I was working. But I was like, all right. So, you know, Clippers are really good. I'm not mad about it. I'm really not mad at how anything that turns out for the rest of the season with them. Just give me fun basketball for 20 more games and I'm fine.
Yeah.
And then just do something in the off season is kind of where I'm at, which is a steep drop from where I was in October. But what he did last night is just kind of insane. And I was going to ask you about this because I listened to Simmons the other day, and this was a conversation we had in the Slack. Mm-hmm. It's like all of our listeners on this channel is the Patreon Slack, so it's okay to kind of talk like inside baseball like this.
Sure.
And you guys kind of talked about the end of college basketball conversation that Simmons had on his show. But there was something he mentioned there when they were talking about Team USA that kind of took me back for a second when he said that it's going to be interesting how they put the Olympic team together because LeBron's not one of the top five USA team players from America anymore. And I sit there and thought about it, and I was like, are we sure?
Yeah.
And I understand people are going to bring up this, and that where he's decreased, but I mean, he shot like 60% since the All-Star break.
Yeah. His, if you just go down year by year stats, his stats this year don't look a whole lot different than most other years.
Right.
Like it's incredible. And I see what he was saying about, he's not like maybe one of the most talented or athletic guys anymore or anything, but like, I think that USA team or any team has a better chance to win if he's one of the five guys on the floor.
Especially
if they're going to bring a bunch of the younger guys and stuff, and for him to kind of be the one who settles the team down. You remember the the 08 Olympics where LeBron was on the team? He was one of the young guys, and they weighed and everything, and they were almost going to lose to Spain, right? And it was Kobe that had to, like, he was the one veteran that kind of brought it all together. Like, I could see LeBron playing a role like that for sure.
I did too, because this team has kind of been described as like the passing of the torch team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about this a million times as well. Every basketball podcast has, in the sense that, you know, the world's caught up, and you can just see in the league alone. I mean, the top, would you say the top three MVP candidates are international players this year. And so it kind of makes it, you know, that's where we're at. The last few MVP winners are international players. So this is kind of like that last hoorah. I wouldn't say it's the last hoorah because I think America's always going to produce talent, but this is like the last of like the guys from like our era. So LeBrons, the Durants, you know, the Steph Currys. I love that Booker and Drew Holiday said they're going to play again.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be huge because in international basketball, you know, it's more role playing.
Yeah.
So like having the perimeter defensive stopper like Drew Holiday is going to be huge for this team. And I think Steve Kerr is like his last thing he has to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. And you know, I'm a LeBron fanboy. We could go on about LeBron all day, but I do have a LeBron take I want to hear your reaction to. And then we can move on. I think this season that he's having is one of the 5-10 best seasons an athlete has ever had. When you factor in 39 years old, 21st year in the league, and you look at everyone that made it that long and what their numbers were in their 21st year, in their age 39 season, and the fact that he has literally like 500% more production than the next best guy.
Right.
I truly think this season he's having it, because the Lakers have been as good, maybe isn't quite as appreciated. And I really think it's one of the most impressive like seasons an athlete, given all those factors that has ever been had.
So I'm going to say with you, and non-fanboy wise, that I agree, because the closest thing to him at age 39 this late in their career is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right.
And Kareem's age 39 season was 17.5 points. And I got it here. 6.7 rebounds.
Yeah.
We're talking about the great, you know, a guy who's often discussed with the Jordans and LeBrons in that upper echelon.
We'll probably come up in our 7-footer draft, but
I would say highly likely, especially now it looks like it's going to be Jonas.
Yeah. No. And I say the only one in our like recent time that like, and he's not the level of player that LeBron or Kareem is, obviously, but do you remember when Vince Carter was doing his farewell mm-hmm. tour when he was like 40 years old? And Vince Carter was, he was an amazing player and an amazing athlete, but it was almost like a little bit of a sideshow. I was thinking about like Joe Johnson also was one guy who played till he was 40, and how diminished that version of them was from their peak versus what LeBron's doing now versus his peak. Like that gap is so much smaller. It's just, I'm amazed. And again, I'm a fan, I'm biased, I fully admit it.
Absolutely.
But I'm just totally just amazed by the season he's having.
We have to go outside of sports, like outside of basketball, to compare it to anybody, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what's so fascinating. You know, obviously the Brady's is always going to come up because of his longevity, and the Barry Bonds are going to come up because of his longevity. Say what you will about what that means. I'll try to get into that conversation by any means.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think this is like, and it's not like he's this guy that held on too long and was just deteriorating and just didn't know when to hang it up either.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so crazy about it. So I think it's a great take. I'm not against it at all. I'm with you, but also literally wearing a LeBron jersey while we're recording.
That's why you're the perfect person to try it out on. So,
yeah. I guess we can stick with this real quick before we move on to our flashback. So this Bronny thing's been coming up a lot, and ESPN dropped him from this draft, this mock draft to the 25 mock draft. I'm not necessarily caring about what LeBron's saying, even though like part of this is his fault because he was like, you know, he's better than most people in the league and he could play on the Lakers. And it's like, there's a reason that like we have this conversation every week and you're not helping it. Right. But this sense that he's going to drop to the 25 draft, I don't think is a good idea. And here's why. So the biggest thing more or less is just that anyone who follows the NBA draft, anyone who follows what's going on, like this draft coming up here in a couple months is not good. You know, Alexander Sarr is probably going to be the number one pick, and he's good. But, you know, if he was in the Wemby draft, he might be the ninth pick, maybe the 10th pick. And, you know, next year, the 25 draft is loaded. Super talented, super deep. So, yes, this has been a really disappointing year for those of us who love the James family and want to see Bronny do well. Obviously, USC has not been anywhere near what we thought they could be with how, you know, what the recruit class they had and the guys that they had that they brought back. But I don't know if it's something where I sit back. I think if I'm him, I think I take my chances going to the combine. I take my chances having this work out. People are going to look at the genetics and go, there's that whole thing. So, you know, you can count on them. Everything I've heard from the scouts I've talked to about him is like, he has a second to none work ethic and he busts his ass to get better and better. I think this was just a fluke because of how the cardiac arrest, I'm not saying like all American first team AP star USC goes on a run if he's healthy kind of thing, but I do think he's better than he's shown. And I do think he would be worth a mid to late second round pick. So especially in a situation like this, where next year, it's if he goes out in the draft, he's looking for a two-way opportunity.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I had a couple of thoughts, and one of them you said. I mean, like, the guy had a heart attack right before the season. Can we give him a break on it? Like, you know, his development, everything. And then what you were saying about LeBron, I agree. The best thing for LeBron would have been to, like, not get too specific, more just hype his son up because he wants to be, you know, good dad and everything. And he maybe got a little bit too specific there. But, like, if he's anybody other than LeBron James, nobody doesn't give us a second thought about it too. So, and as far as Bronny goes, my thing is, I think Bronny should just do exactly what is best for him as if his dad wasn't LeBron James.
Yeah.
Like, and I think, and that's become the debate. Should he just come out for the reasons you just said, which are very valid, or should he go back 1 year and risk, you know, a more talented draft? What if he stayed 3 years in college? What if that was the best thing for him to do and like really take time to develop? And, you know, he's much less physically, he's compared to all of us, incredibly physically gifted, but not as much as his dad. Right. And so maybe he's one of those guys who needs to like polish up every single skill before you go to the NBA. So I don't know. I agree with your idea. Go to the combine, see what happens. And if you don't have a good feel for it, go back to college, you know, do whatever is best for him as if his dad's not LeBron. He's feel like he's got so much extra pressure on him just because of that.
Yeah. I think you're silly enough to say, I think it's a 1 or 3 year thing. I think it's the college baseball rule for him. I think it's the best option. I think it's, you know, go in the 24 draft or stay till the 26 draft, because stay away from the 25 draft by all net counts and measures. Just do not take a chance because everyone's in that draft.
Well, and the other thing about coming back, even if it was one more year, he would at least get to play his natural position they play in the pros in point guard, because Collier is going to leave. Right. And so I think there's some value in him coming back to college for a, at least one full year and playing point guard and having that development and getting past his health issues and everything. But I see your point. Like I don't disagree. Why not come back? And even if you do really well, but the draft doesn't really suit you, play another year in college. Doesn't need the money.
Like, right. So. Yeah. It's not like we're like, you know, it's not like he's like, he's the only option for his family by any means.
Right, right, right. Exactly. No, no. I think we're pretty on the same page there.
Speaking of drafts, I didn't tell you I was going to, it just popped in my head. Did you see today, Caitlin Clark officially said she's going to enter the WNBA draft.
Ah, I didn't see that. I mean,
ooh, Indiana Fever?
Yeah. It would be amazing. I was having a conversation about her and what impact she could have pretty much single-handedly on the WNBA draft. Like, could she be such an attraction that she sells out arenas where she goes around and really is the one to kind of lift, like certain players have done at certain times for the NBA when the NBA was down, it lifted them back up, or, you know, and so I don't know. She'd be incredible to see. I mean, she's the female Steph Curry. It's amazing. So I think somebody said she could make twice as much money if she stayed at Iowa another year versus the WNBA salary. So, but yeah, I'm really interested to follow her or how her career goes once she does get in the WNBA.
Yeah, because so to further your point about the money situation, if she stayed another year, Paige Beckers is going back to UConn because like if she came out, she'd probably be the top three pick in this draft.
Yeah.
But you're the best player on UConn's women's team, and you're probably going to a national championship this year.
Yeah.
That money's going to look pretty good when you come back for your senior year. Plus all the injuries and stuff she had. So she's doing all right. I just watched her play in person a couple weeks ago, and I was blown away.
Wow.
I love it, man. I love where women's basketball is going. So you talked about I thought Sabrina Ionescu was like the first super college women's basketball darling of this generation. And I was like, I didn't think it was possible she would be surpassed. And she's been like, and she's still great. I mean, she's still one of the top 10 women's players in the world.
Yeah.
But she's just been like leaps and bounds surpassed by Caitlin Clark. And that's not an insult.
Yeah, there is a theory going around that more men basketball college fans are going to shift to the women's game, mostly because of familiarity, like because according to WNBA rules, they all have to stay at least 3 years, and there's not as much transfers and everything going on. You actually have more familiarity with the teams and everything. So I think this Final Four and this tournament the women's have could end up being a real jumping off point for like the popularity explosion of women's basketball.
I completely agree, man. Especially like, so you mentioned the 3 year rule. Mm-hmm. That means Juju Watkins is going to be in school for two more years, and she is insane. She's so good.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. So it's really fun. I'm really happy to see it. I think it's just been great for women's basketball and women's sports in general. So I'm excited. And plus, like, we have a decent relationship with the Mad Ants. So I wonder, since they're all in the same window, maybe they'll give us a credential for Fever game so we can just go watch your play and cover it.
You should start working on that now before they get Caitlin Clark. It might be easier to get now than then.
Yeah, shoot a shot at least, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's get to our flashback segment. And I didn't even think about when I brought you on the sense that you lived in Chicago as this was going down. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to kind of dive a little bit into the Jimmy Butler to Minnesota trade and everything that happened and why it happened and how it all worked out. So start with my end, obviously a lowly Bulls fan at the time, just coming off a year where Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade are playing with Jimmy Butler in Chicago. They have a 2-0 lead on the Boston Celtics in the first round of the playoffs as the 8 seed. And then Rajon Rondo gets hurt. The Celtics are going to win 4 in a row. This is like the Isaiah Thomas loses his sister series.
Yep.
So that was really, really tough, like hard to root against him in that series, even as a fan of the other team. And you would know this pretty well from the fact you were there, but Gar Foreman and John Paxson were very much open that they never really saw Jimmy Butler as the guy, which is very stupid, but that's a very stupid franchise. So it's just going to call what it is. They're a team that, you know, their franchise that was still hurting, that Derrick Rose did not end up being everything they wanted him to be. And they couldn't get over it. And so, you know, they had a lot of great runs with Butler. He developed into being this great player. He never liked Fred Hoiberg. It was very obvious that they did not get along. So the team picked Hoiberg over Butler, which is forever one of the stupidest moves. And for being a stupid franchise, it's one of the stupidest moves a stupid franchise ever made. So we get to draft night, and there's so many rumblings about what could happen with Butler. Like, there's conversations about, is he going to go to Cleveland, play with LeBron for a year before LeBron goes to Los Angeles, see if they can make one more run at a Cavs title. There's the conversation that he has a meeting with the Denver Nuggets to see, like, is this a possibility? And this is way before the Nuggets we know now. This is way before Jokic develops into best player in the world. What else was going around that time? Miami was an early one.
The one you're missing is Boston. Like,
that's right.
Like, Boston was trying to get Butler, and then they instead ended up getting Kyrie.
That's right. Yeah. And Paul George. There's a deal on the table for Paul George that, like, I'm shocked didn't happen.
It's one of my favorite things about the NBA. It's the sliding door stuff. Because one thing happened, all these things happened after it. Or would this one thing didn't happen and all these things. I mean, think about, like, if Butler goes to the Cavs, like, do they have a more formidable roster to go against that, like, incredible Warriors team and everything? And or does Kyrie stick around if Butler's there? Things like that. So, yeah, but Well, I remember living there. It was the Cavs, Boston, and I didn't know about the Denver one, but I always knew about Cavs and the Celtics when they were shopping him. Those were the two places people thought he'd go outside of Minnesota.
Yeah, and you mentioned the potential of the Cleveland thing. Cleveland also was trying to get Paul George at this time, and I guess we're like the tail's on the table.
Yeah,
with Indiana, and then it ended up not happening. So it was like a whole lot of like moving pieces, like you said, because Golden State basically made everyone think about what can we do. And so we get to the point, and if you remember too, to kind of add to the Minnesota thing, the year before the deal was on the table as well, Zach LaVine and the pick that was Chris Dunn for Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
And they said no at that time.
Right.
So the fact that a year later they made the deal. And so this was kind of like, we knew he was going to get moved as Bulls fans. I actually went to a draft party, wore my Chicago Bulls Jimmy Butler jersey and was like, this might be the last time I can wear this, so I might as well break it out. And I remember the deal comes out that it's like, okay, so Butler's going to Minnesota for this pick, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. And I was like, okay, that's not bad. And then like a few minutes later, as Woj is like putting the tweets out during the draft like he normally does, they mention they swapped picks. And I go, why do they swap picks if they're giving up Jimmy Butler? Like, why? This is the stupidest. Like, I was so irritated. That's when I was like annoyed. It's like they're going through the draft, and you know, for me being a Xavier guy, the last I saw of Lauri Markkanen was he couldn't get a rebound against Sean O'Mara. So I'm like not thinking about him being a possibility. The Bulls don't even scout him. There's no like workouts with him, nothing.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, you know, they're going to go get like Malik Monk or somebody, which was very dumb of me to think that Malik Monk would have been a better pick than Mark at the time. I'm aware of that, but I just watched Malik Monk drop like 45 on North Carolina. Yeah. So
I mean, he was a superior college player for sure.
Like, yes. I was like, all right, cool. The pick comes out that it's Lauri Markkanen, and me and my two buddies, Sean being one of them, actually, we just literally sat there on a couch just like in disarray. Like, we gave up Butler for all this, and we lose our minds. Like, we're like, what? Like, they could have got Markkanen later, all this stuff. Like, they didn't even scout him. He was never a name that came up for a possibility. And I just remember being so freaking heartbroken. And then it comes around to the second round that night. And the Bulls had their pick. And they sell the pick to, of all teams, the freaking best team in the world, the Golden State Warriors. Ends up being Jordan Bell, who you and I talked about off air. Like, I really like Jordan Bell, but hindsight probably wasn't that terrible. I actually ended up playing one game for the Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's your immaculate grid right there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so let's start there before we get into the Minnesota portion of this. What do you remember about all this mess?
So I remember the so I was coming off of being a season ticket. This is a quick side tangent, and then I'll get to the Jimmy Butler. So this is the reason I'm not a Bulls fan, Tim. I don't know if I've ever told you this.
I'm really excited to hear this.
I the summer of 2015, I got asked to share Bulls season tickets with two other guys. So I was basically in for 15 games with them preseason is what it was. And I made the commitment, these thousands of dollars, 2 months before I was getting married, and did not tell my fiance at the time. She was not super happy about it, but I convinced her. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, I have these 15 games. I will sell 4 or 5 and pay for the whole season, and it'd be like we're going to 10 games for free. Because the Bulls are coming off of, this is the height of Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler's just developing, Luol Deng, Joakim Noah. Well, that was the year first game of the year was when, and I got those tickets, was when LeBron came back to Cleveland. His first game back in Cleveland was against the Bulls opening night in Chicago. Incredible game. I was like, I'm going to sell these tickets for like 5 times what they're worth. Well, the stupid Cubs decided to be in the NLDS that night, and nobody wanted to buy these tickets, even for face value. So I ended up going to the game. It was an incredible game. Like 2 games later, Derrick Rose blows out his knee. Everyone gets injured. They won 21 games that year. I couldn't give away tickets by the end of the season. And I just have a seething wife at me about every time a Bulls game came up and I brought up the idea of going. So anyway, I was very bitter at the Bulls because of that. So it was the next season, I believe, that all this happened. Butler's being shopped because the main reasons were, you said the one that front office just didn't believe in him for whatever reason, didn't think he was as good as everybody else thought he was. And then him and Derrick Rose didn't like each other at all. I guess the third was the Hoiberg thing. Hoiberg didn't he come out and say something about Hoiberg in the media? Like
many of times.
Yes. Yeah. And so anyway, I thought like it was crazy to deal a guy who was still cheap because of where he was drafted and was so productive, like it just seemed like a bad move. But anyway, they do it. And the thing that made people in Chicago the mad, I remember my few Chicago buddies, was the swapping of first round picks. Like, why are we swapping first round picks? And the only thing we can come up with is it's a money thing, right? Like they don't want to pay 2 first round draft picks. That's the only reason they swapped, opposed to just taking that Minnesota pick. And then sure enough, they, as you said, they sell the second round pick, which makes me dig in even more that's the reason they swapped instead of just taking it. But like all that aside, the thing with the Butler trade, if you look at it now, I think as bad as all that was, the return they got wasn't too bad. It was probably about accurate, but in classic Bulls fashion, they screwed it up after the facts. Like they didn't deal LaVine at his height, and now is paying him too much money to not play basketball.
Yep.
Chris Dunn never turned into what they thought he would be, which could either be Chris Dunn or the Bulls' lack of developments. And I'd actually go with the latter because of other things.
Look at Lauri Markkanen.
And exactly. And Lauri Markkanen, the second he leaves the Bulls, he turns into an all-star. The Bulls couldn't figure out how to use him, where to play him. You remember they were playing him against small forwards and he was chasing around like guys who was way too athletic to guard and everything. And so the deal itself, as frustrating as it was, wasn't the worst thing in the world. It's just that they mismanaged it after the fact also.
Oh, for sure. And like that's a chain of effects. So Hoiberg gets fired. Jim Boylan becomes the coach, and that's even more of a nightmare than Fred Hoiberg. He literally has, I don't know if people know, I'm sure you do just from, you know, like I said, being there. He literally installed a punch card system at the practice at the Birdo Center. So when players came in, he wanted them to punch to say that they clocked in.
Yeah.
This is a real thing. This is not.
No, I remember.
Yeah. So on the Minnesota end, obviously, he goes to this press conference, and do you remember the press conference was really funny. This is the press conference where he gives out his cell phone number. And he's like, there's like clips of him on social media where he's talking to people on the phone like, hey, what's up? Like, you getting season tickets? Like, we're going to be really good. We obviously know they go to the playoffs that year. It's the like first time Minnesota goes to the playoffs since Kevin Garnett. They get blown out in the first round by Houston.
Right.
And then it gets really fun on their end where it's like right before camp starts, it comes out that Jimmy Butler requests a trade.
Mm-hmm.
And Tibbs is the coach at Minnesota, obviously, at the time. I don't know if we mentioned that earlier. But he decides that, no, I'm going to hold on Jimmy Butler because Jimmy Butler's my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to the infamous practice. The greatest practice story of all time. If you've listened to, you and I have both talked about, we're both fans of Club 520. So we've heard Jeff Teague tell the story about Butler goes to practice and cuts off Minnesota from his gear. It just says Timberwolves on everything. And as soon as like he plays and beats them with the scout team, they run to go get him out of the locker room. They like run it back and he's gone. And they said like an hour later, he's doing the interview with Rachel Nichols on ESPN. So they trade him to Philly.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what they got.
No, I got it. I looked that up too. And so that's part of the thing is, you know, Minnesota traded him a year and a half later and they got a worse return than the Bulls did. Right? Like their return, I got it here, was Robert Covington, Dario Saric, Jared Bayless, and a second round pick. Yeah. So that makes the Bulls, again, the trade itself, what they got wasn't the worst thing in the world. It was the fact that it got to that point with the Bulls where they didn't do the more obvious thing. And Butler was the guy they should have held out to as all the other guys were aging and built the team, started building around him as one of the core pieces. But then also, if you're going to make that trade, you got to do right by the guys you're getting too. And they kind of honestly screwed up kind of all three players that they got in that deal.
They really did. Oh, man. Oh, that's the worst. And the thing is so funny. So Butler's still not traded after this like whole practice scenario. Ends up playing like 3 or 4 weeks into the season. Derrick Rose has the 50-point game with Minnesota. And Butler pops into his press conference to say something to him. But still not traded. He's like playing games, as a matter of fact. I think it's into finally he gets traded, like we mentioned there. So just like a total mess, especially now because apparently there is no love between Minnesota and Jimmy Butler. If he goes back, he is booed horribly. Yeah. He had, of course, the emo hair press conference for media day. He talks about, he's like, you know, it's really cool when you see people wear jerseys from like Chicago or skip a team or Philadelphia or Miami, like blatantly just says like, because like the proverbial middle finger.
Yeah.
In typical Jimmy Butler fashion, but just like the funniest turn of events of trades of all time. Have to do with Jimmy Butler, and then he's on the sign and trade with Miami to Miami, and look at him now, like just, you know, one of the 10 best playoff players in the world right now. And
yeah, and you, I think you can't blame all these teams, like Chicago, Minnesota, like Butler kind of made some of his own bed in these instances and everything, but like the Philly one, even more than Chicago or Minnesota, like he's the perfect fit playing next to Embiid and everything. That's the one they really should have made work. And I think they would have been a top or one of the top seeds in the East the last few years if they had.
I completely agree. Because him and Bam are excellent together.
Yeah.
And Bam is nowhere near the offensive player Embiid is.
Right.
So imagine what that's like.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Especially
but they chose, and we're making fun of Chicago, but Philly chose Ben Simmons over Jimmy Butler.
So. And Tobias Harris. And Tobias Harris.
Oh, that was so great. Yeah.
There's that famous clip where Phil, like, they go to Philly with Miami and he just crushes them.
Yeah.
And he's leaving, and you hear him go, they picked Tobias Harris over me?
That's exactly what was going on in my mind as you were saying this while I was laughing. Yeah.
It's just like, Butler's one of my all time favorite players, one of my favorite Bulls ever. Mainly because he just kind of was the guy who wasn't afraid to give them the FU that they deserved.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and he just – fans always love, like, the blue-collar guy, right, which is what he was, especially in his first few years with Tibbs. Remember, Tibbs was playing 48 minutes every playoff game to, like, chase around the other best offense player on the other team, and he kind of got, like, that Iron Man vibe back then. And it was so funny. He went from, like, a huge fan favorite to just the complete opposite pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because, you know, and there's, like, a ton of Bulls fans that defend the trade, and they just are like, and like we mentioned, the return, in hindsight, could have been great, and it just wasn't because the Bulls don't know what they're doing. And look at the draft after Lauri Markkanen. Wendell Carter looks very good in Orlando when he plays, where they're paying Nikola Vucevic right now a lot of money to play part-time.
On the list of like Bulls transactions, like and the how bad they were, like this one's actually pretty far down the list. it just, like I said, screwed up after the fact.
I'm so happy I got someone who lived in Chicago to talk. Just go back through that with it again, just because it's so, you know, as a Bulls fan who didn't live in Chicago, and then having someone who did, who's not a Bulls fan, was like fantastic.
Those 2010s, maybe from like 28 to about this time, Bulls teams were so much fun because you start out with like the Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon teams that like they're all the very, you know, the underdog teams that like always play well. And then they got like Noah and Dang, who are both kind of those guys, and Butler. If Rose had two healthy knees, who knows what the Bulls could have done that decade. But
literally the year Joakim Noah wins Defensive Player of the Year, he was third in MVP voting.
Yeah.
Insane.
It's wild to think about nowadays. Cause you think about like this year, like who's probably third in MVP voting? Giannis.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, Kawhi's probably up there because he's played basketball this year.
I think I was looking at the favorites from like a betting standpoint or whatever, and I think it, in order, Jokic is the favorite, SGA, then Giannis, then Luka maybe is four, and then I can't really remember after that. You're probably right. But I was just thinking about that. Like, Noah was third in the MVP. If the MVP was decided today, most likely Giannis would be third. It's just totally different world of basketball.
You think about like prime Giannis going against prime Noah and how you're like, oh, that is not attractive basketball at all. Like, Noah's like lucky if he doesn't score 40.
Yes, I know.
That's not an insult to Joakim Noah. If he heard it, he would definitely take it as an insult.
I just hope I would watch that as long as it didn't turn into a free throw shooting contest, because those guys are brutal to watch at that.
Yeah, there's so many like fun Joakim Noah memories too. Like there's like they had the ESPN game. They were playing the Heat during the LeBron run. And his dad's being interviewed by, like, I think Michelle Tafoya. Mm-hmm. And he gets a fast break dunk. And his dad is, like, has the microphone, like, going crazy. Like, such an awesome moment.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I could talk about that team forever.
I thought you were going to go with the I've never heard of anybody vacationing in Cleveland.
That's a classic. Yeah, that's a classic. But like both of our wives' families live in Cleveland, so we have vacation in Cleveland. We might be the only two, but we have.
So true. No, it's great.
When you said he hated the Heat because they were Hollywood as hell. That's a classic. One of my favorites. Oh man, so many good Joakim Noahs.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. Well, let's get to our starting five, which is going to be really bad, but this is what was given to us. I make the rules, but I didn't make the draft this time.
Well, let me ask you this. So we're doing the best seven footers. Mm-hmm. Should we draft in a way that these seven footers are going to be on one team together? Like one of these seven footers that need to be the point guard, one to be the shooting guard. Like, is that how we're going to do it?
We're going to roll just like that. Like this is like NBA 2K, my team, basically.
Okay. All right.
So, Kevin, you are the guest, and I appreciate you being here. So I think it's only fair you got the first pick.
Okay. Well, the first one, especially if we're going, and we did talk about it earlier, they have to be legit seven-footers, not 6'11 guys. So, like, otherwise Durant might be in play here or something. But right. First pick's a no-brainer. It's got to be Kareem.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely Kareem. All right. So I will go Shaq, 7'1". MDE, most dominant ever. So that's, I think that's pretty rational.
Okay. Are we doing snake draft or are you going? Am I going?
With we have two of us, I don't think it's fair to go snake because you can just steal a guy. So,
okay. So, yeah, that so my wheels are turning now. So I need like Kareem's like your traditional center. So the rest of my team, I got to fill out with guys who can actually theoretically play other positions in this. So, I think my second pick, I think I'm going to go Hakeem with my second pick.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because Hakeem footwork, I could see him being a three or something. So.
Yeah. All right. That's a great way to put it. So in that case, for my four, I'm going Dirk.
Yeah, that's a good call. That was going to be my next one if you didn't do it.
Yeah, too easy.
So yeah. Okay, so I'm pivoting now because you took my next one. And I think a little bit of recency biased, but I'm going to go Joel Embiid.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, good.
Because I think he could be a power forward theoretically on this team. And this year, he was like, by the stats, having the greatest offensive season in NBA history. And like, I just, you know, he's too good. I got to do it.
I like it. So if we're going in the sense of I need someone who is 7 feet tall and can handle the ball, I'm also going recency bias. And for my point guard, I'm going Victor Wembanyama.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good. It's I actually thought about him with, I was going to wait till my fifth pick, but you beat me to it because you're right. I mean, he's young enough and athletic enough. He theoretically could play other positions, but he should be center.
Yeah. For the sake of injury, probably say it's best just put him on the block, but I don't think the Spurs will do that.
Yeah, for sure. So, and that's like, and I'm passing over a couple of guys that might be higher on like the all-time list, but because I'm trying to do it of this team, right? So I'm actually, for like a shooting guard, I'm at least going with guys who moved really well, good footwork, you know, things like that. So I'm going to go with David Robinson.
Oh, the Admiral. That's a good pick. All right. This is definitely not a guy that anyone thinks of amongst the elite seven-footers of all time. But I'm with you. I need guys who I know can score and, you know, I can play on the wing. So I'm going with the Dunking Dutchman, Rick Smits.
Oh, nice. Nice. All right. Well, I hate to do this pick that I'm about to do, but like if you have a team full of seven-footers, like it's going to be really hard to get shooting.
But so, this would be the worst basketball game ever to watch.
It would be, but it would be, I think it'd actually be like kind of terribly entertaining.
Yes.
And so I think I'm going to go with Cat, Karl Anthony Towns, so he could be my shooting guard. Yeah.
That's good. I can't believe we did an all seven-footers draft and no one took Will Chamberlain.
I know. Isn't that terrible? But like, and he's just so long. It's hard for us to like, I Kareem, at least I saw a lot of like old highlights and stuff. I feel like I've barely ever seen tape of Will play. It's mostly through stats and, you know, hearsay. Right.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I guess I have the last pick. Coming at 7 foot even, two-time NBA champ, Pau Gasol.
There you go. There you go. I was curious because if it was going to be three of us and we were doing a snake, I was like, was Marc Gasol like 7 foot? Because I take both Gasol? Yeah, he was. He's just under 7 foot. So he was ineligible for this.
Well, I kind of want to put these teams together on 2K and simulate a game now and see what it would look like. Also, be the Bulls fan, not taking Artis Gilmore.
Yeah, good for you. Great restraint.
Yeah. Actually, it wasn't that difficult at all. So notable, this is the fun thing to do. Here's some of the notable guys we did not select. We already mentioned we didn't take Wilt. Let's see here. Robert Parrish, not taken. Patrick Ewing, not taken. Yao Ming, not selected. Dikembe Mutombo. And Ralph Sampson and Sean Bradley.
Can I tell you the other guy I was I was thinking about, because we're trying to fill out like an actual team with seven footers? I was thinking about, I can't remember his first name, but older Sabonis,
Arvidas.
Arvidas Sabonis.
Yeah,
you have the European version because I actually saw some tapes and everything. He
was sick.
He moved incredibly and everything. So I was thinking about him, but like I was like, yeah, the NBA version wasn't nearly as good as what he probably was before he came to the NBA.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Well, Kevin, so as the guest and as the in the rotation, I'm going to let you decide what the draft will be for next week's episode.
All right. So I told you I won, but I have two, and then I want you to pick your favorite out of these.
Okay.
All right. So the one we talked about, I like do a draft around the guys who have the best NBA highlight tapes. So not the best players, but if you're on YouTube and you watch a 3-minute clip, you think this guy might have been the best basketball player in the world. And I said the example of it is he would be on no list of greatest NBA players of all time. But if you watch somebody like a Jason Williams, like White Chocolate on the Kings, has an incredible highlight tape. So something like that. But the other idea I had, and because this is Cincinnati, you know, Cincinnati based company, everything. Have you done a draft on NBA players with a Cincinnati connection, meaning they either played locally or they're from the greater Cincinnati area?
Holy crap. No, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So I was thinking like, you know, Kenyon Martin, Brian Grant, they'd be eligible because they played at UC.
David West. Yeah.
Yeah. But then guys like Bill Walker, OJ Mayo, all of those guys would be eligible as well. Did Shire play in the NBA at all? He would be, if he played in the NBA, he'd be eligible. But I don't know if he did since he's from the Cincinnati area. But yeah, that's what I was thinking. Do a draft of NBA players with a Cincinnati connection. Either they played college there, or they're from they lived in the greater Cincinnati at some point.
That's super good.
Yeah,
I never thought about that.
Yeah, got a lot of talent. Like, a lot of talent that came through, especially, you know, UC and Xavier back in the 90s, early 2000s, sent a lot of guys to the NBA. Yeah. There was a fun fact, because I'm a UC guy, and I know you've covered UC and everything, even though you're a Xavier fan. But, like, was it last NBA season? Two NBA seasons ago, the year before Tari Eason came into the league. It was the first season there was no Bearcats appeared in an NBA game that whole season since 1991.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So the Bearcats went over 30 years where they had a Bearcat in the NBA every single season, which kind of corresponds with like the Huggins starting and all that kind of stuff. And then they finally got to a point where the program got bad enough we didn't have an NBA guy in the league for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, Xavier's holding strong right now with Najee and Colby.
Yeah.
But it's not, yeah, I mean, you know, David West was like a two-time All-Star, two-time NBA champ.
Yep.
James Posey, Tyrone Hill.
Xavier probably has a pretty similar set. I bet in that same 30-plus years, there's probably a Musketeer in the NBA, maybe all but a couple seasons. Or there might have been a couple seasons in there, like between guys or something. But it's just, when you think about it, it's like, it's just kind of a cool thing that, like, somebody from UC or someone from Xavier was in the NBA every season for 30, 40 years.
Yeah, that's a really good one, Kevin.
Yeah,
I'm bringing you back next week for that one. You got to at least do the draft because that's too good.
Okay, sounds good.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this week's edition of NBA Friday. Definitely, Kevin, appreciate you filling in and hanging out. The banter was great. I had a lot of fun having you on. I don't even know. Like, I know you threw the Slack, but like, do you have socials? Can we shout out your socials? Is that a thing?
No, I'm not a socials guy.
Good for you, man.
The world's a crazy enough place.
Yeah. Well, if you want to interact with Kevin, then pay us $2 a month to join our Patreon.
There you go.
And it's worth it. So
exactly. You all were my excuse to get off Twitter. So it can still suck sports without all the toxicity. So,
oh, dude, I know. I just had to put it back on my phone because the baseball season's starting.
Yeah.
And that's all, like, you know, that's how I got to promote late night Reds. And I'm just like, I hate this so much. I hate it.
For sure.
But yeah, check out everything going on the Riverfront. Obviously on the Reds channel, you got myself on Sunday nights on Late Night Reds with Ben Brown. You've got Red Leg Roundtable, which we just added with Seth Shaner. Just had a great interview with Adam Rosales. And then if you're checking out Riverfront Red Show today, episode 523, I'm on that as well. So
you're a busy guy.
Get a double dosage of Tim Daniel. Either you're welcome or I'm sorry. I don't know which one to say. But hopefully we've got everyone back next week for our regular team. Thank you all for hanging out. I greatly appreciate it. If you are checking us out on YouTube, as always, like and subscribe if you haven't already. On behalf of Kevin Lynch, this is Tim Daniel. Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good one.